Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Let's be honest, you've been portrayed as a monster.
Yes.
Evil, maniacal.
What's it like to interview a killer? 48 Hours is taking you inside what we've learned about the criminal mind. This is Killer Conversation. You can follow and listen to Killer Conversation on Tuesdays in the 48 Hours podcast feed on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rob Brown Show is on your radio. It is the fan upstate, Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo, and you. The Hub City Spartanburger text line is open for you at 844-326-3663. 844-FANFONE is the number. You can also get at us on air if you want to use that number to jump on air. You can do it. 844-326-3663 is the number to call in and be a part of the radio program. You can also tweet me at the Rob Brown Show. You can tweet Lonzo at Lonzo on Word. And you can tweet everybody at the station at the Fan Upstate if you want to get at us in that direction. We'd love to have you as a part of the armada, as we affectionately refer to you stellar P1 ball knowers that listen to the show every single morning. We have got a lot to get to, a lot to cover. We are going to spend some more time talking about some of the topics we hit in hour number one. Coming up here in just a little while from now, Ryan Clark has fired back at LeBron James because of the commentary on ring culture that I defended LeBron a few days ago. I want to play the clip of Ryan Clark and his commentary on that, as well as address what Ryan Clark had to say yesterday about the ring conversation. We're going to get to that coming up very shortly. Audio Blitz at 8 a.m. I've got some stellar audio for you today, including some of the clips from the Thunder's championship parade held yesterday in the OKC. That was, I don't know, hilarious. Ryan Fitzmagic had some relationship advice for those of you bros who do bros weekends. I do a bro weekend once or twice a year. Me and the fellas, we get up out of Dodge, go play some golf, get us an Airbnb up in the mountains, bring the guitars, play a little La Musica. He's got some advice, and I want to address it. I want to talk about it. Dan Orlovsky had some comments on Bryce Young and the Carolina Panthers. I'm going to play for you. We're going to address that coming up in the next segment of the show. And, you know, I busted up Kendrick Perkins quite a bit for some of the NBA takes he's had. But he had a wonderful take on a podcast yesterday that I'm going to play for you coming up here later on in the show. We'll address it as well. But it is 7:03 in the morning. You have 56 and some change minutes to get your bootay into the office. You have 56 and some change minutes to sit down at the desk, to get clocked in, to get logged in, and to start responding to all those passive-aggressive emails that you didn't want to respond to last night because you were busy watching baseball or whatever. We finally finished Agatha All Along yesterday. Just got to the end of that.
That took you like a year?
Yeah. It was good.
It's all right.
It was good. Wasn't great. Wasn't terrible.
There were parts of it. There were characters, certain characters that were really good.
Yeah. I'm interested to see Aubrey Plaza as Death, Lady Death in the future.
That would be the character that was pretty good.
I was into it. I was into it a lot. So we'll maybe we'll do a little pop culture segment.
Don't make it creepy.
Yeah, it's Lady Death, and I just said I'm turned on. Like, yeah, what do you want? It's already creepy.
All right.
Blah 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 blah. Water cooler cheat sheet. It is indeed the water cooler cheat sheet. The top three sports stories you need to know before you get to the office and start talking sports. Before you get to the office and say to all your coworkers. And start talking sports. This is what you're going to be talking about. Let's dive right in with item number one. I will be more optimistic when they beat anybody else, but for some reason, the Atlanta Braves continue to be the kryptonite for the New York Metropolitans. New York tumbling ever rapidly back down closer to 500. They are 12 games over it. Let's take a metaphorical chill pill here. The Braves doing their darndest to climb back to 500. Doesn't help you when you go lose 2 of 3 to the Marlins. But after a 7-4 victory last night, the Atlanta Braves are now a perfect 5-0 over their NL East rivals and second in the division rivals, the New York Mets. Spencer Strider went just 5 innings, 91 pitches to get out of the 5, but in that 5 and 91 pitches, allowed only 2 hits, 3 runs, all earned 4 walks, and K'd 8 in the victory. Johnson Montero, Dodd, De Los Santos, and Iglesias all combined to wrap it up. De Los Santos gave up a pair of hits in just a third of an inning served. Iglesias came in for the close, gave up 1 hit and 1 K in the final 2/3 of the bottom of the 9th inning. From the dish, the Atlanta Braves wrapped up 8 hits last night. A pair of them came from Matt Olson. Ozuna had one. Riley had one. Eli White pinched for Alex Verdugo, who was 0-for-2. He went 1-for-3 in a pinch roll. Michael Harris II. We have to have a conversation, Braves fans, about Michael Harris II. Because a cat who has been a stalwart for this team the last couple of years. And more importantly, a cat who has been an absolute defensive wizard for the Braves this year stinks from the dish. Not isn't good. Not is below average. He stinks from the dish this year, and we need to address that. We will later up on in the show, but Michael Harris did go 0-for-2 with 2 Ks. Nick Allen had 3 hits, going 3-for-4 with an RBI last night, the unsung hero of this game. Matty Olson had his 20th double of the season. Austin Riley got his 14th. Matt Olson got 3 ribbies last night, now sitting at 52, which is a surprisingly good number. Surprisingly good number for where he is. Ozzie Albies had his 28th RBI. Austin Riley his 41st. Eli White his 16th. Nick Allen his 14th. Last night, Riley and Olson both had 2 out RBIs, which has been a major struggle for the Atlanta Braves. It has been getting 2 outs and still moving guys around the base pass. I have said a few times, I think the Braves continue to press, A. And B, I think this team lacks the plate discipline of a very good baseball team, which they have the talent to be, but not the results to show for it. I do take great pleasure in beating the New York Metropolitans. I take great pleasure as a large chunk of my NL East dedicated social media algorithm has New York Met fans on it. I enjoy watching the meltdown when the Mets lose to the Braves yet again, as they did last night. Again, 0-5 against Atlanta this year. But Atlanta's got to do it against somebody else. Clearly, this is a matchup thing for whatever reason, and clearly the matchup thing is in favor of the ATL. That's splendiferous.
No chance that this can build confidence and suddenly they can do it to other teams?
I have to say no right now because last week the Braves swept the Mets at the crib 3 consecutive games. Then they turned around and they dropped 2 out of 3 against the second worst team in the National League, the Miami Marlins. And didn't just lose to the Marlins, they embarrassed themselves against the Miami Marlins in 2 of 3. They did win 1-7, but they got hammered the other 2 games, including to a pitcher named Junk. Now, if a pitcher throws Junk, that's That's bad. His name's junk. And you lost to that guy. By the way, just his second win on the season. So I would love to say, hey, maybe this is a turning point. Maybe they go, wait a minute, fellas. We have now hit everything the Mets have in five consecutive games against them. In the first three games, they bounced three good Mets pitchers. In the last two games, they bounced two good Mets pitchers. And I would like to point out that so far through the first half of the season, while the Mets are struggling right now, they've dropped something like 12 out of their last 14 games. Their pitching numbers have been spectacular. Their pitching numbers have been very, very good. They've been losing a lot of like one-run low-scoring ball games. So I'd like to say confidence here. You're hitting the best the Mets have. You're hitting one of the better pitching teams in the National League, in Major League Baseball. But you just did this last week, and then you turn around and you drop 2-3 to the second worst team in the National League, Miami. Now, this one is going to be interesting because the Braves have two more games in a four-game set. They are 2-0 in this series, 5-0 in the season so far. They have two more games tonight and tomorrow, both at 7:10, both in New York. In both of those games, they will be going with interesting pitching matchups. Didier Fuentes, who was a recent call-up for Atlanta, who had a stellar outing in his rookie debut, will get the start tonight. Tomorrow, the Braves will be going with Grant Holmes, who has been way above average, way above where he was supposed to be coming in. So if the Braves go 4-0, if the Braves end the first half against the New York Mets with a 7-0 record, you'd go, hey, you got to feel pretty good about that. That's not what I'm worried about. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the Philadelphia Phillies come to town. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the best team in the National League East comes to town. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the third best team in the National League comes to town. Now, the good news for Atlanta, Elder, Schwellenbach, Strider. You got your 1-2-3. Well, technically, you got your, I guess your 2-3-4, because Chris Sale is out with a broken rib. You know, the guy that was a Cy Young contender. Might be when he comes back, depending on how long he's out. What I can tell you is, I've broken my rib before. I've had the exact same injury that Chris Sale just got. Again, the best player for the Atlanta Braves. The guy who would have been the Braves' lone all-star contributor unless Ronnie gets a fan vote nod. We'll see. Grant Holmes cracked two ribs. You ever had a cracked rib?
I've had bruised ribs.
Yeah.
And it was hard to breathe.
It's miserable.
It was the size of a fist, and it was purple.
Yeah, it sucks a
lot. With yellow in it, so it, not quite broken, but I just want to point out the severity of it.
I have had the exact injury Chris Sale has. Not the same two ribs, but I have had two cracked ribs. And here's what I'm going to tell you. It hurts to breathe. It hurts to hold your breath. It hurts to sit down. It hurts to stand up. It hurts to lie down. It hurts to do anything and everything. And it hurts to do anything that requires more physical exertion than breathe. It hurts to breathe. It hurts twice as much to do anything more than breathe. I've been here. I've done it. It is not something. And again, Chris Sale is 36, 37 years old. He's not a 22-year-old guy. He's in his late 30s. He's closer to my age than Spencer Strider's age. I will tell you that when I cracked my rib, I was 27, 28 years old. Buddy, I was miserable for a month.
Well, when I got the bruised ribs, thanks to a 6'5 tackle who punched me every time I got through the line, which was a whole lot. I was a senior in high school. I was 17 and in great shape. And it took me at least a month or two to recover from that.
It takes weeks. And then on top of that, Chris Sale's got to come back. He's probably going to have to do a rehab start or two in Gwinnett. Maybe he goes up to and he starts out of the pen to do some short service time, whatever. This is not something that he bounces back from. So you're going with your 2-3-4 as your 1-2-3. If the Braves take two out of the three from Philly at the crib, I'll feel a lot better. Because to wrap it up, you've got the LA Angels, one of the worst teams in baseball. And scratch that, on paper. They're actually playing pretty good ball right now. You got the LA Angels. You got a three-gamer against the Baltimore Orioles. All those games at home. You were at home for like 12 consecutive games. Then you're at Oakland, or scratch that. Then you're at Sacramento. You're at the, I heard somebody refer to them yesterday. We're going to, instead of calling them the A's, we're going to say A. So they're the Oakland A's. We're going to take them on for three games in Oakland and then three games at St. Louis before the wild card break July 13th. If the Braves finish, even if they just win one of the next two against the Mets, I'm not even saying you got to sweep this four-gamer. If you take three out of the four, you take two out of the three against the Philadelphia Phillies, then you have to prove it to me with the Angels, the Orioles, the Ass, and the Redbirds. If you get through that stretch and you have a plus 500 record from now to the All-Star break, I may very well reevaluate the Braves at the break. But if this is a 500 or worse record by the end of the year, when I say I'm done, I'm not like, ha ha, Rob's mad, he's done, done. I mean, I may not talk about the Braves on the radio through the second half of the season.
So if they're 500 and you look around and the majority of the teams are 500, you're still going to have that attitude.
If they're 500 on the season, that means that they had a spectacular record here. I'm talking about for the remainder of the first half. I'm talking about the series against New York, two more games, three against Philly, three against the Angels, three against the Orioles, three against the Athletics, three against the Redbirds. If they go plus 500 down this stretch, and they are, let's say, 4 or 5 games under 500 at the end of the year instead of where they are now, 4 games under it. If they are closer to 500 than 4 games under 500 at the break, I'll reevaluate. Maybe I'll try some positivity coming up in the I just realized this is item number one.
Yeah.
Okay, speed round. Item number two. I'll come back to the Braves. Back in January, we just learned this yesterday, an arbiter heard a case between the NFL Players Association and NFL owners where the Players Association alleged that the NFL colluded between teams in order to restrict the amount of guaranteed money that would be handed out to NFL players in contracts. The Pablo Torre Finds Out podcast reported yesterday about a decision made on January 14th, which has not been made public until today. Contacted by ESPN, the NFLPA declined to comment. The NFL did not respond to ESPN. A federally appointed arbiter by the name of Christopher Droney did not award any damages and dismissed the NFLPA's demand in its entirety. However, and this is why this is going to be interesting, he said that, quote, by a clear preponderance of the evidence that concerted action was contemplated and invited at the March 2022 owners meeting. Basically, what he said was this: the owners had a conversation that, if acted upon, would be considered collusion, but they did not do it. They basically had a conversation of how do we limit guaranteed money contracts moving forward, which makes sense. I told you when Deshaun Watson got $250 million plus in guaranteed money that this was going to come up. Now that we have big name free agents that are going onto the market and are basically demanding fully guaranteed contracts, that this was going to be an inevitable conversation held by the league. What Droney found was that the league had discussions that, if acted upon, would be collusion, but that they did not, or at least the NFLPA could not prove that the league actually acted upon those discussions. Droney said that there are three elements to determine whether collusion occurred. One of them is concerted action contemplated, and one of them is concerted action invited. Basically, do you take seriously the action that you discuss? He said they did discuss what could be considered collusion, but they did not, A, take it seriously, as in move in, start having ideas of, okay, how do we implement this? And B, they did not take active steps in order to enact the topics of the discussion. So the NFLPA did indeed prove that the NFL had a conversation that, if acted upon, would be collusion, but could not prove that the NFL actually acted in a state of collusion. This is kind of one of those stories that might sound kind of boring on the outside. It's like, what's the big deal? The answer is, if the NFL has ever proven to collude, the NFLPA is going to get a lot back from them down the line. And now it's been proven that they've had the conversation. So they're going to have to be real careful, which means what? Probably more guaranteed contracts coming down the pipe. Good, bad, ugly, indifferent? I don't know. We'll find out. Let's very quickly get to item number three. We will address this story when we come back here in just a minute, but I will lay it out for you now. ESPN and other outlets reporting that a decision about the potential expansion of the NCAA's men's and women's championship basketball tournaments will happen in the next few weeks. It is being reported right now that the most likely outcome is a 72-team basketball championship tournament, and that the 76-team conference tournament, or championship tournament, pardon me, is still very much an active discussion, though right now it seems like those in the NCAA with the power to enact this change are leaning towards a 72-team team. Pete Thamel reported this yesterday for ESPN. He said, quote, if the decision is made to expand, the expansion would begin in the 2025-26 season per sources, and the tournament would expand to no more than 76 teams. Sources have indicated to ESPN for months that 76 is the more likely expansion option than the 72, as the current format for the men's and women's tournament is 68. So that's my bad. I got those numbers backwards. It's actually 76 is the more likely outcome, according to the sources, as reported on by Pete Thamel. When we come back here in a minute, let's address this very quickly, shall we? We'll get to that on the flip side. Final segment of this hour, I want to address the Ryan Clark response to LeBron James' comments on ring culture being too important in the NBA. I think they're interesting. I disagree with Ryan, but I like the argument. So we'll have that. 8 o'clock, audio blitz, some of the best audio we've picked up, and then after that, whatever y'all want to get to. It's up to you. The Rob Brown Show, The Fan Upstate.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
Let's be honest, you've been portrayed as a monster.
Yes.
Evil, maniacal.
What's it like to interview a killer? 48 Hours is taking you inside what we've learned about the criminal mind. This is Killer Conversation. You can follow and listen to Killer Conversation on Tuesdays in the 48 Hours podcast feed on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
A decision on whether or not to expand the NCAA men's and women's basketball tournaments will be made sometime in the next few weeks. That, according to Pete Thamel of ESPN. He writes in an article currently on that website right now, quote, if the decision is made to expand, the expansion will begin in the 2025-26 season per would expand to no more than 76 teams. Sources have indicated to ESPN for months that 76 is the more likely expansion option than 72, as the current format for the men's and women's tournament is 68 teams. The NCAA remains in talks with its media partners about the potential expansion, which have been ongoing for months. An expansion of the tournament would be a historic and potentially controversial step for the NCAA. An 8-team addition would be the biggest jump in how the men's NCAA basketball tournament has been compromised since 1985. The men's tournament expanded to 64 teams in 1985. An additional team was added in 2001, and the expansion to the current 68-team format came back in 2011. The expectation, according to Thamel, is that both the men's and women's tournaments would grow by the same amount of teams. NCAA President Charlie Baker has been open and talking publicly about tournament expansion, telling reporters at a Big 12 meeting in May that the NCAA is having, quote, good conversation with its media partners. He goes on to quote Baker as saying, quote, our goal here is to try to get to either yes or no sometime in the next few months, because there's a lot of logistical work that would be associated with doing this. If we were going to go down this road, you just think about the opening weekends, who has to travel the longest. It gets complicated. One of the logistics would be the expected addition of at least one additional site, such as Dayton, in the men's NCAA tournament. ESPN reported in February that a location would be expected to be outside of the Eastern time zone. Yay! Okay, that's a personal gripe, because you boys got to get up at bleep you o'clock in the morning.
So you prefer the Western time zone?
No. I prefer the Eastern time zone, because like a late night start in the East is 8:30, at least if they're tipping games at 8. But like when we get to March and those games are tipping off at 10:15 at night, and I feel like I'm compelled to watch them, late night Rob thinks it's great. Because unfortunately, Rob Brown picked the absolute worst time slot to be a late night guy, and I'm a late night guy. My best work's at night, right? Unfortunately, it just is. I struggle in the daytime. I'm a night owl. I'm nocturnal. Back when I used to do morning radio, back at the beginning of this 18-year journey that I am currently on, because reasons, I actually, this is not a joke, I used to be nocturnal. My day consisted of get off the radio at 10, do like an hour or two of my adulting work. I would go home. I would sleep from like 2 in the afternoon until like 8 o'clock at night. I would get up. I would watch the nighttime sports, and then I would go to work. Like, I'd watch the nighttime sports. Sometimes I would go out to a local watering hole and like sit down, because that's where people are, to keep myself awake, have a couple of Red Bulls or whatever, and then I'd go do the show. And the morning show on my old station was 6 to 9, and 6 to 9 was like the end of my day. I would do that, and then I'd go back to the house and I'd sleep in the daytime. I don't have that as a now married man with responsibilities. I don't have that right. I don't have that ability. I don't have that opportunity. So now these 10-15 games are killing me. I'm actually, this may shock you, I'm actually only 28 years old, but I just look like I'm 40. That's the job I'm in right now. So
really? So you started in radio when you were 11?
I mean, I was real good. I was a prodigy.
Okay.
I was
all
a
right,
prodigy.
All right.
So I am very anti-expansion of the tournament. Now, this is the second time this week that more sports is good, Rob Brown, has said that I'm against more sports. I am fine if instead of expanding to 76 teams, if we keep it at 68. Honestly, I'd be fine if we stepped it back. I know that's never going to happen, right? Very few sports are ever going to agree to fewer games. And no media partners, which are the primary supplier of dollars to any given entity, no TV markets are going to say, yeah, we'd like less games, please. But I'm firmly against expanding the tournament. And I'll tell you why. It is very simply a matter of the more teams and the more games, teams that have earned the right. And yes, we can argue that the process by which we say earns the right is controversial. Every year we have, oh, who got snubbed? Who got the snub this year? What teams are in that shouldn't be, and what teams are out that shouldn't be? While the process to select teams that have earned the right to play in the championship tournament is controversial some years, debatable others, I think that having that many teams in, I do think it waters down the product ultimately. We love the upsets in the March Madness tournament. Of course we do. But I have also said I genuinely believe this is not a hot take. This is something that I tell the buddies away from radio. Deck and I have had as many fights about this off the air as we have had on it. There is a reason that I do think that college baseball has the best postseason in American sports. And a huge part of the reason is the formatting of it. The regionals, the Super Regionals, and the finals being held in Omaha, Nebraska. With the Super Regionals, four teams from across the country all descend onto one college and or university. Those four teams have to be four of the best teams in the United States. They have to prove it through the course of the regular season. But the eight best teams in college baseball, they earn themselves a little bit of an advantage. They get to host. They get to be in their own locker room. They get to sleep in their own beds. They get to have their own fans. They get to be around their own people. They get to play on their own field. They don't have to travel. There's no getting on airplanes and buses and checking into hotels and yada, yada, yada. It's a little home cooking. That is a reward, but they still have to go out there and they have to win baseball games. The second reason is the NCAA baseball tournament is at all three stages, regionals, super regionals, Omaha. It's double elimination. So the best team can go out there and can have its worst day of the year, and they can lose a game that they have no business losing. But they're not eliminated. They're not done. Yeah, it puts them at a disadvantage. Now, you may very well have to beat a team twice, but you can still do that. And if you're one of the best teams, you should. And if you can't, then yeah, you're not a champ. In the basketball tournament, you get one L. Again, the year that UMBC beat Virginia in the opening round, a 16 beats a 1. That is one of those upsets that goes into that Appalachian State-Michigan realm of, I will never forget watching that game. I will never forget watching the end of that game. I'll never forget the celly that America hit in that moment. But here's the thing. Virginia was empirically one of the best basketball teams in America that year. If they play that game 100 times, Virginia wins it 99. But because they had their absolute and without question worst day of the year on the same day that a good UMBC team had their best day of the year, Virginia completely lost the chance to win a title when we all knew UMBC is not getting past another round. And they did. Did they win another one? I don't remember. Not the point. The point here is when you water down the product that much, you're going to see some of the best teams, some of the real championship teams, lose fluke games and get bounced. Now, that is the reason so many of y'all like March Madness. I don't. I want the best teams playing for a championship, not having one bad day and getting bounced. The more teams you put in, yeah, you're going to get rid of some of the snubs of bubble teams, but the more teams that you put in, the more likely it is that the best team, the truly best team, has its worst day and gets bounced in a dumb reason. The best teams in basketball lose regular season games to dumb teams all the time. Do we really want to dictate our champion that way? The answer for me is no. We'll address this more later on in the show. The Rob Brown Show is on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
Let's be honest, you've been portrayed as a monster.
Yes.
Evil, maniacal.
What's it like to interview a killer? 48 Hours is taking you inside what we've learned about the criminal mind. This is Killer Conversation. You can follow and listen to Killer Conversation on Tuesdays in the 48 Hours podcast feed on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So a little earlier in the week, I defended the commentary of LeBron James, who said that we focus too much on ring culture in the NBA. He said we've crafted this narrative where we kind of hesitate to call great individual players if they don't get a ring. And even if guys do get a ring, we don't call them amongst the GOATs unless they stack rings, unless they get multiple rings. And LeBron took a lot of backlash, was called a hypocrite by a lot of people, because LeBron has absolutely chased rings in his career. He left Cleveland to go to Miami to chase rings. He left Miami to go back to Cleveland to chase rings. He left Cleveland to go to Los Angeles. I think to chase rings. I also think to chase legacy, because being a Lakers legend is whether you like it or not. And I don't, just so we're clear. Being a Lakers legend is going to put you up in lights in a way that being a Cleveland Cavaliers legend is not. So I think he was chasing a ring to LA, but I also think that he was kind of chasing legacy. Do I have an issue with that? Yes and no. I mean, I on one hand, you're one of the most famous athletes on planet Earth, and chasing that legacy is how you make sure that after you are done with basketball, whether it's next offseason or the one after that, that you have the ability to keep that name out there, to keep the image out there, to keep the likeness out there, to keep getting jobs and keep stacking dollar bills, y'all. I don't really have a problem with it. So I defended LeBron James and said, here's the thing. Yes, LeBron's a ring chaser. And yes, it is ironic, though I do not think hypocritical, for somebody that is absolutely a ring chaser to then turn around after chasing rings and say, making us chase rings to be in the GOAT conversation is a misplaced priority. I actually agree with that entirely. The argument that I made was LeBron James did not have a choice but to chase rings. Well, that's not true. He did have a choice. Choice number one was to chase rings and therefore at least give himself an opportunity long term. Because remember, when he was ring chasing, with the exception of the move to the Lakers, and as I've said before, I think that the move to the Lakers was as much about chasing his post-career legacy as it was about chasing a ring. But I do think it was to chase a ring too. He effectively, when he made the decision to leave Cleveland to go to Miami and Miami to go back to Cleveland, was chasing rings because he knew if he is ever going to be in the conversation with Jordan, Kobe, Shaq, whoever, Tim Duncan, whoever you think is in that discussion, he was going to have to stack rings, or else y'all, as the gatekeeping public, which you are, you have the right to be, it is our game. The gatekeeping public would never let LeBron into the discussion with those guys unless he at least threatened to match their ring count. And I think LeBron always wanted to be in the GOAT discussion. And here's the thing. A lot of people have a knee-jerk reaction to that being bad. I don't. Do you not want your highlight player, no matter who your team is, do you not want your highlight player, your marquee, your franchise, your guy, do you not want them to want to be a GOAT? Do you not want them to want to be a multi-time champion? Even if you think it may mean that down the line they leave your team, you want them to want rings. We all want rings. We support our teams because we love our teams, but we all want our teams to win a championship. So I did not have any issue with the comments of LeBron James. And I went one step further and said, all of y'all calling LeBron a hypocrite, you're the reason that he had to do what he had to do. Because you Jordan stands when you make the argument that Jordan's the GOAT and LeBron doesn't deserve to be in that conversation. When you Kobe stands who say Kobe's the GOAT and LeBron doesn't deserve to be in the conversation. What is the absolute first argument that any and all of you make about it? Rings. It's the first thing you go to. Well, Jordan's got six. You go right to it. So the only way that LeBron could guarantee that you at least have to consider him in that conversation was to go get rings. That's why he chased. Now, a lot of talking heads keep firing back about LeBron. One of them is ESPN's Ryan Clark. Now, this clip is from his podcast, but I did pull it from his Instagram account. So there is some cheesy social media trending viral audio music behind it. But I think the point will get through. So I want to play it, and then I want to address it when he's done. Okay, let's get to some of the things that he said there. First and foremost, this is the one thing that I do want to lean on. LeBron James has four championships. He got two in Miami, he got one in Cleveland, he got one with the Lakers. If you are going to hit me with he only has three because the COVID title doesn't count, miss me. I don't want to hear it. Every NBA team was in the bubble. Every NBA team was playing in the same rules, in the same environment, in the same place. Everybody had the opportunity to win that title. Braun, AD, they won it. So he's got four titles. Michael Jordan had six. Kobe Bryant, I would say, is it fair to say that those are the other two players in the GOAT discussion? Like, there's other great players. There's the Magics and the Larry Birds and all that.
Yeah, that's, in my opinion, there's only two. So, and that's LeBron and Michael Jordan.
Fair enough. But if we're going to say that for the American public, we're having the GOAT discussion. I think a lot of people my age say Kobe. So I'll include the three. LeBron has one fewer than Kobe and two fewer than Mike.
But remember, they discount the Kobe ones because of Shaq.
Because that is Kobe, part of the discussion.
Because Kobe wasn't the man there. He was Batman. He was Robin to Shaq's Batman.
Correct.
For the first couple titles.
But also keep in mind that when Shaq left, Kobe got another one. So that's what a lot of people lean on. Is like, yeah, we got some with Shaq, but he also got him without Shaq.
So he got one on his own or two on
his own? Did he get two on his own? Either way, the point was that team sans Shaq, that was not a great team. But I would also make the argument, the 2016 Cleveland Cavaliers were not a great team. They're not winning that title without LeBron. The 2012 and 2013 Miami teams were very good teams, but they were the Big Three and Big Z, right? Like they were good teams because they had the Big Three, but there was good players, but there wasn't a ton of depth. Like Udonis Haslem, right? Like there was good players, but not a ton of depth.
They weren't the Big Three. The Big Three was in Boston, and they're the ones that started it in Boston.
The Big Three, but there was absolutely a Big Three. Bosh, Wade, and LeBron were a Big Three in Miami. So the point that I would make here in response to Ryan Clark is this. He started that, and this is what I'm really interested to get Lonzo's thought on, because Lonzo and I have butted heads about this similar conversation in the NFL, specifically about quarterbacks for a long time. And I do have to kind of ask you about it, great one, because you have kind of had, I don't want to say opposite, but you've kind of had an opposite argument about Dan Marino, who Ryan Clark mentioned there at the beginning of that take, that Dan Marino can't be in a greatest of all time conversation or even a great conversation because Dan Marino never won a Super Bowl as a quarterback, despite the fact that when he left the NFL, at a point in time, by the way, where defenders were allowed to straight up commit physical assault on wide receivers, ask Jerry Rice, Dan Marino had 40 passing records, and most of them stood for 30 years. His 5,084 yards and 48 touchdowns from his 1984 campaign stood for 30 years. When he retired, he was the all-time passing leader in passing yards, passing touchdowns, completions, attempts. He had 40 records when he left the game. He was a generational outlier, but you've made the argument in the past. Didn't win a Super Bowl, so he's kind of lost a little bit of a weight there. A, does that same criteria hold up for LeBron, or does LeBron winning four rings elevate him above that? And B, how do you feel about the rest of what he had to say? That it's, oh, they come through in the most important moments. LeBron's got one fewer title than Kobe. One. Had played a lot longer, but has one fewer title than Kobe Bryant. This doesn't hold up to me. All of this is coming up and across as a, I don't like LeBron conversation. Nobody is saying anything other than, oh, well, rings equal greatness. And I don't agree with that take, because if rings equal greatness, and yes, quarterback's different than anybody else on a football field, but if rings equal greatness, Barry Sanders wasn't great. Bruce Smith wasn't great. Randy Moss wasn't great. Never got a ring. Eric Dickerson, Jim Kelly, Larry Fitzgerald, Anthony Munoz, Calvin Johnson, Alan Page. These are all NFL players. Again, only a couple of them quarterbacks, but these are all great NFL players who never won a ring. So, do we stand on none of those players are great players, or do we stand on championships bolster the resume, but they do not define it? That's where I land.
Here's the other thing. All right. There are some guys who are going to make the Hall of Fame. If they didn't win a Super Bowl, they would not be there. Eli Manning, going to make Super Bowl, going to be in the Hall of Fame. He's not yet, right? He's
correct.
Yeah, so he's not yet. He's going to be because he won a couple Super Bowls. Mm-hmm. You take those Super Bowls away from him, there's no way he makes it in the Hall of Fame. So rings can elevate you to a degree where you can actually do something that you couldn't have done without it. As far as Dan Marino goes, I mean, he was a really good player. He was. But he didn't win a championship, and the majority of his records are gone. So that's the thing. Those records, awesome when you get them, but if he had won a couple rings, he'd be mentioned up there with Joe Montana, with Tom Brady, with those guys. But he can't be mentioned with those because he didn't win a Super Bowl.
By the way, just because I kind of thought this was going to come up, here are the records Dan Marino still holds. This is just for reference and curiosity. Most games with 400-plus passing yards in a single season. Most seasons leading the league in pass attempts. Most seasons with 30-plus touchdown passes before age 30. A lot of these do have qualifiers, but they are still there. Fastest to 100 career passing touchdowns. Youngest quarterback to throw for 5,000-plus yards in a season, and highest touchdown percentage in a season in the modern era. So you are right. He has lost most of the 40 records that he had when he left. But I would also point out that of those records that he's lost since he retired with 40 records in the books, it took Peyton Manning, Dan Marino, and Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, and Tom Brady to beat most of those. It took three guys that are absolutely all three in the GOAT discussion with Brady to beat.
Not only were they broken there, they've been broken multiple times.
No, I'm saying those records were individually split up, took all three quarterbacks, because all of them hold a few of the records.
And right? When it comes to LeBron, it's popular to hate him. So. And you gain points if you hate them in a venue where everyone can see you hate them. And again, like I said, when we talked about this a couple of days ago or yesterday, I have no idea about what time means. It's about the messenger. If someone else said it, everyone would be like, yeah, he's right. But because LeBron said it, now all of a sudden, nothing's going on. Let's pile on.
Okay,
LeBron.
But who's that guy then? Who's that guy?
Who could say that and get away with it?
No. The guy that in your logic that you just laid out, who's the guy or the guys who have made it cool to hate LeBron? I would argue it's not that there's like this thing of it gains you points. I think of a lot of it comes from two places. I think number one, LeBron's outside of basketball activities.
A lot of it's ESPN.
Hang on, because I don't disagree, but I think even with the ESPN folks, it stems from a reason. I think there are two of them. I think number one, a lot of it comes from LeBron's off-court activities, his activism, his speaking out in politics, his I'll call it a spade, hypocrisy when it came to commentary on China and his movie and all that.
I want to say, all those guys are on his side on that.
I don't think that is correct, but the other thing that I think this comes from is, and this I can attest from conversations with my circle, I think a lot of it is also he threatened Jordan, and people who grew up with Jordan look at that as you're threatening my guy, you're threatening my GOAT, you're threatening my generation's guy, just like Jordan threatened the GOATs of the generations before that and took a lot of crap in his career because of it too. I think it stems from those two things. But I would also point out, every time that I have defended LeBron on air or online, the folks that have come back all say the same thing. Oh, well, he chased rings. Yeah, but you're not debating my point, which is he chased rings because you made him, or else you would never have talked about him the way you do. We'll bring this back up later on the show because I do think it is a much deeper conversation than that coming up in the next hour. Got your audio blitz, some of the best audio we've picked up over the past 24 hours. We'll talk some Braves ball and more. The Rob Brown Show, that is all after Lonzo arouses you, metaphorically speaking, with the Sports Flash.
If you're not chasing rings in your chosen profession, you are complacent and boring. The Atlanta Braves are now 5-0 against the Mets after a 7-4 win last night, led by Spencer Strider, who threw five innings, striking out eight and allowing two hits and three runs. Braves batters had eight hits, including a pair from Matt Olson and three from Nick Allen. And Rob, that guy who just left the room, he wants you to know that Atlanta is now 37-41 and 9.5 games behind Philly in the division, and they haven't even played half their games yet. The Boston Celtics are sending center Kristaps Porzingis to the Atlanta Hawks in a three-team deal, which will see Terrence Mann and the number 22 pick sent to the Nets with a second-round pick in 2031. 2031, wow. Porzingis has shot 41% from three and averaged 19 points per game with Boston over the last two seasons. Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Aaron Rodgers told the Pat McAfee show yesterday that he expects this NFL season to be his last, telling McAfee that's why he signed a one-year deal.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
Let's be honest, you've been portrayed as a monster.
Yes.
Evil, maniacal.
What's it like to interview a killer? 48 Hours is taking you inside what we've learned about the criminal mind. This is Killer Conversation. You can follow and listen to Killer Conversation on Tuesdays in the 48 Hours podcast feed on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.